Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, the show is entirely financed and made possible by patrons who are listeners like you who choose to go to patreon.com/thefeedersclub to help out with the show financially. If you enjoy the show, if you think it brings something to your life, if it brings entertainment or a little bit of perspective, please do consider going to patreon.com/thefeedersclub and seeing if the supporting is for you. And the link is also in the show notes, by the way, if you don't know how to spell that out. Thank you so much to those who already do support the show, and on with the actual episode. Hey everyone, this is the Phileas Club, episode number 137. We are in November 2019, and we're going to be talking about the UAE space program, the impeachment proceedings, and strikes in France. What else? And demonstrations, of course. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club, a show where we get people from different places in the world, different cultures, different backgrounds, and talk about the news to give you different opinions and views on what's happening around our lovely blue planet. My name is Patrick Beja. I am in Finland. I'm originally from France. It is currently 3 p.m. for me, and I'm very happy to be joined by someone we haven't seen in, I don't know, 2 years? Mahmoud? Is it long? Something like that.
I'm thinking more like 3 years.
3 years. Wow. Well, thank you for coming back to the show. You're in Dubai currently.
I'm in Dubai, yes.
It's 3, 4 p.m. for you?
It's 5 p.m.
5 p.m. So we're roughly, you know, that's roughly equivalent. Thanks for being on. And we also have another co-host who has been up since, I guess, before 5 a.m., because it's 5 now for him in Las Vegas, which means, obviously, he was partying all night and just came from the from a casino straight to the show. Gunnar, how's it going?
Yeah, very, very well. It's been many moons since one of those things. I am getting up from an evening of sleep, but we did go out for a lovely dinner past our normal bedtime last night, so... We're trying.
So you're in that phase of your life, which I know very well. we're going to have a bunch of interesting discussions. Some of them might involve how certain impeachment proceedings are going, which I suspect are actually less eventful than some people would hope for. But that's how impeachments go. But We'll discuss that in a little bit. We'll also discuss strikes and demonstrations in France and even in Finland. So as I joked before we started recording, what else is new? But in Europe. But let's start with the one that has the most jittery connection. So let's take advantage of the stability while we have it. Mahmoud, what's happening in the Middle East and in Dubai? Tell us everything.
Okay, well, since you said Dubai, I'll go with the Dubai story. We discussed earlier before I came on the show that I'm not going to do anything political or upsetting, because all news is upsetting. So I'm sticking to some light news. You know, I had enough of that. Those who listen to me on the show know exactly what I'm talking about. It's always some horrible terrorist attack when I'm on. So hopefully nothing happens today. So the main story for me here in Dubai is the United Arab Space Program. It's the first Arab country to have a legitimate space program and actually have an astronaut on the International Space Station about a month ago. He came back. And now they're going to prepare to launch a probe to Mars in July 2020, which is something unprecedented here in the Arab world.
That's amazing.
I had no idea. That's very cool. I hadn't heard about this.
To be fair, I don't keep up with the news very closely. So that space program is UAE specific, or is it more broad across the Arab world?
No, it's UAE specific. It's very UAE.
Okay.
They tend to make a point about that. It's only that. Yeah. They like to be, and rightfully so, called number one in everything. So they try to be, achieving whatever they do alone and making a big fuss about it. That's why I was surprised you didn't hear about it, because the amount of media and publicity around this stuff is staggering here in the region.
I'm sure it was mentioned here and there.
I haven't heard anything here either.
Oh, well, yeah. There you go. See, it's not just me. I feel a bit less dumb. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for being dumb with me, Gunnar.
Yeah, when I was preparing for the show, I got some the news from the Washington Post. So, it gets around the news, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's a very, 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 good thing amidst all the turmoil and unrest and wars and all of that, somebody aspiring to space and actually achieving it, and it makes me kind of proud living here in this country.
Yeah. So I can't remember if I mentioned in the intro, but you're originally from Jordan, and you've been living for a very long time in the UAE, in Dubai.
Not a very long time, around 6-7 years now.
Right. Wow. Well, okay. I've always known you to be in the UAE. It's been forever, essentially.
Well, I think the first time we actually talked, I think it was 2013, 14, something like that.
Not
that far long.
So the space program, that's the issue you're mentioning, how inspiring it is. And I think that's always the value in that those kinds of programs. Certainly it has been in the past. And I've been watching on Apple TV Plus For All Mankind, and I've been watching on Netflix there's a Mars docu drama trying to show how it could happen, the Mars colonization. And what is very clear from both those shows is this is not necessarily, it is about exploration, but it could be seen as a waste because it costs a lot and you don't really get anything directly immediately. Of course, research trickles down to the practical uses down the line. But I guess the question I'm asking is the public in the UAE seeing this as a necessary thing, or the pride is so big that they're rooting for it, or are some people saying we should be spending money on other stuff?
No. Absolutely, they're very ecstatic about it. They can't believe it. It's one of the most things they're proud of, and the government here makes it a point. This is not about going to space. This is about building a nation through the space program, training scientists and technicians and getting young students interested in science. It's never been about actually putting like a satellite or shooting, firing a rocket up there or anything like that. It's about what goes the capacity building about around it, mobilizing the whole country, engaging all of the school students and children in the country, because when they grow up, they're the one who's gonna lead. And they make this point very, very clear. It's not about wasting money. It's about not about being the first, although they will say it when they do it, being the first. But what they emphasize is this is about building a nation, not building a rocket or sending a man to space. Yeah.
It's really funny because we have such a specific image about the Arab world and a certain view. I think we were discussing this when we did the episode about China in Africa, And we touched on the views that the quote-unquote colonizers have of those places, even when they mean well and even when they want to help. The view is different. It's shifted. It's colored by decades of history and culture. And yeah. When you say
and
this,
the media.
Yeah. And the media, I guess, as well. But even that, you know, the view is shaped by how we think about things. We were talking about some things in that episode, which I encourage listeners to go back and listen to. It's from a couple of months ago. And the way the Chinese approach Africa is just very factual, matter, you know, business-like. And the way we look, even when we want to help, it's very, I don't know. Well, go back and listen to it. You'll understand what I mean. But here, the way I look at this is I'm reminded of something that that Turkey was saying in a couple of episodes. You know, when we talk about how the Arab world, in his case, Saudi Arabia, is evolving culturally, he was saying, you know, a few decades ago, it was the country was tribal, and there were almost literally it was people living in tents with camels, and societal and technological leaps that they've had to do and that they've done in a few decades is staggering. And when you say this, maybe it's because of where I'm from, although I was born in the Middle East, but I think, oh my God, what an achievement going from a tribal society to sending people in space in such a short time. Is that something that plays a part in the pride, or is that something that when I say spit in my face and go like you?
No. And like for the United Arab Emirates, it's more of the Kingston Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia, although you know,
can you speak a bit closer to the mic, please? We're having a hard time.
Oh, okay, sorry. I put the phone down. Sorry. Okay. I was saying it's more the case for the United Arab Emirates to be proud of going in such a short time from, you know, what you said, the desert and the tents and the camels to space, more than Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia I'll try not to offend any listeners from Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia is a very extreme case in the Arab world. Saudi Arabia does not represent what the Arab world is about. And everything that you think of as being negative about the region is mainly Saudi Arabia, not anybody else.
I'm sure you're not gonna make any enemies at all saying this. It's uncontroversial opinion.
It's a known fact. Look, I spent a lot of time in Saudi Arabia and traveling for business and such. And I'm not talking about the people. You know, the people are good everywhere. You will find the good and the bad. I'm talking about the society and the government. And the politics and what happens and the image in the West about what's the Arab world. So women in veils, that's, you know, against their will, that's Saudi Arabia. Women not allowed to driving, that's only Saudi Arabia in the world, not just in the Middle East. So
although it's changing, but very slowly, yeah.
It's changing, but some will argue it's not for the right reasons. It's changing for something else. The intention behind it is not a good intention. But it's strange. But, you know, let's not dwell on that. I'm sure people will not like to hear what I have to say about that subject. So getting back to the UAE, yeah.
Gunnar, you wanted to ask something? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if I could ask a question. I'm looking here. I'm fascinated by this, and I'm seeing that the average age of somebody working on the UAE's Mars mission is 27, which fascinates me. But yes. The idea of, you know, building a nation and not building a rocket in the U.S., I'm just relating this back to when the, you know, we had the Cold War and it was let's go to the moon and we got to, you know, beat the Russians. And there was a lot of unrest in this country at that time in terms of civil rights. And part of the message of those, the Black Power movement at the time, was why do you have so much money to waste on this program and you can't do anything for our community? Having that message and coming at it from this way just seems like a very smart way. I'm just wondering how is that being perceived in this idea of that it's really a youthful mission that is doing this. And so is it really, you had said that everyone's proud, but is there messaging, you know, coming from the government, and is everyone talking about this, or what is it like?
Okay, so the situation here is very different. The United Arab Emirates has a booming, well, not a booming economy, a slowing economy, but it's one of the richest countries in the world. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Money, economy, jobs, relatively recently people have been raising their voices about locals, I mean, not expats, locals, about finding jobs. But everything here is covered. The society is very well taken care of by the government. They have nothing to complain about, and they say it. We have nothing to complain about. This is what they ask for: more achievements, more advancement, put us in the ranks of the first world. So when UAE compares itself, it compares itself to the first top five countries in the world in any sector, whether it's health, economy, trade, whatever. So the divide or the gap between what you imagine the Arab world is and what UAE is like the gap from here to the moon, staying on the topic. a lot of people, you know, have the stereotypical idea of desert camels, tents, people in certain clothes, maybe having a gun on their side.
I'll push back on that a little bit. In the case of Dubai, partly because there have been so many movies showcasing the skyscrapers in Dubai, I don't think that's quite the image we have anymore. Or at least it's not for me.
I would agree with you, Patrick. When I think of Dubai and what I know about it from friends who travel there, and I will fully admit it's a lot of engineers who are going on building projects. So I'm hearing about the most extreme and the biggest and the craziest things being built. Yeah.
And a vacation destination, like tourism has become huge with, by the way, questionable employment practices for non-nationals.
Maybe in the construction business for manual labor, it's certainly the best in the Gulf region. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
the worst being a place like Qatar, where they're building the World Cup stadiums right now, and everybody knows about the conditions there. It's far better here, but for everybody else, it's a comfortable life. It's for expats and for locals more so, but expats, I'm personally very happy here.
Interesting.
I could never have achieved what I achieved here in Dubai and back home in Jordan. It's a totally different story. So I'm telling you, it's a rosy picture, and it's believable here in Dubai and the UAE to a big extent. There are some downsides, there are some criticisms that one can talk about. But when you're talking about the story I'm talking about, which is the space program and putting a man in space and now sending a probe to Mars, it's something that makes me really happy, you know, being from this region and living through all the wars and the turmoil and all the bad stuff. So, you know, something nice to talk about for a change.
It certainly, we can hear it in your voice, and that's, you promised a positive story, so thank you for that. Oh, yeah. It certainly feels positive.
Sure. I have another story that I can go, like, in passing, like, say.
Okay, go ahead.
And it's about Jordan this time, not about the... it's about music. How do you guys feel about Coldplay? Do you like Coldplay or do you hate Coldplay?
Sure, it's fine. It's fine. It's Coldplay.
It's music. Yeah.
Yeah, it's music.
It's the Nickelback of, I know, Britain.
Let's not do that to them.
Yeah, but Coldplay launched their new album. It's called Daily Life. And it's a YouTube original, actually, and they streamed the whole album I think a couple of days ago live from, you know, my home city, from Amman, Jordan, very near to where I used to live and where I grew up. And you can find the entire stream on YouTube, I think, but it has to be YouTube Prime. I'm not sure if it's on normal YouTube. And for me, I don't hate Coldplay, but I don't love Coldplay. Some music from them I like, some I don't. This album is very good. There are some cringy moments, lovey-dovey, living together, peace, all of that. stuff, you know, but it's a good album. And the way they did it, which was surprising, though, they streamed the whole thing live from the Amman Citadel, which is an ancient Roman slash Islamic ruin in the middle of the city. And they have two sides on the album, one called Sunrise, one called Sunset. They streamed Sunrise at Sunrise and Sunset at Sunset. It was very beautiful. I enjoyed watching it a lot. And they had some, you know, some surprising guest stars on some tracks. Stromae, maybe, Patrick, you know Stromae.
Yes, Stromae, the French,
The French dude.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's on there, and they had some local musicians and singers as well. And I know if you want to see where I grew up, go and watch that live stream for Coldplay, and you'll see my city and my neighborhood in the background.
Cool. Very cool. I guess we can feel a little bit of pride as well in this news. Is it like...
No, I'm glad somebody's having
a good time. It's the first time I've seen, you know, my neighborhood in this context.
Yeah.
It was beautifully shot. The music is good as well. Although they're, you know, warning some cringy moments, as I said. But, you know, it stirred up some feelings. I'm homesick now. I want to go home.
Listen, it feels like we should have ended with these topics because, like, to lift our spirits after what's happening.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mahmoud. We will try to keep that feeling alive in our hearts as we tumble down the horrors of the rest of the show.
Talk about impeachment.
Well, so we are going to be talking about impeachment. But just before that, Gunnar, you contacted me a couple of months ago, and you said, hey, love this show. It's awesome. It's the best show ever, right? I think those were the words you used.
Pretty much the words, yes.
But there are a couple of things I'd like to add and say and mention, and I'm glad to have you on the show to talk about these things. We're going to be talking about the impeachment proceedings in the U.S., of course, but you also wanted to talk about African-American representation on the show specifically and in general. I'll leave the floor open to you because I'm very curious to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, thank you for that, Patrick. Yeah, I think for me, in listening to the show and the guest who moved from Sweden and moved to Minnesota, is it Wendy?
Yes.
Am I correct? Yes. So... it was just interesting to me listening to that, especially being someone who grew up in Minnesota and having lived there for 40 years as an African-American. And I will just say from the get-go that the African-American experience is much different in the United States than the white experience. I think we're all kind of aware of that, but I don't know if everybody knows just how different that can be. I will also say that I don't speak for everyone, obviously. I went to prep school. I did many different things than a lot of the stereotypical experience would be. I grew up in the suburbs, you know, that there's just a lot of that. So I will put that disclaimer out there. But in Minnesota, especially, we just ranked last in the country for the education gap between students of color and white students. We are at a point where our students of color are graduating about 30-40% less than white students are from high schools.
Wow.
So we have a real problem right now in that respect. And of course that leads to all other kinds of problems. But our, like, the black wealth in the United States is about 1/10 of what white wealth is on any measure. And even if you look at African-Americans or blacks that have college degrees, you're talking only about 70% of white wealth. So we still have a lot of systemic issues that affect the black experience in our daily lives more so than some others. So for me, writing in was about just saying, hey, you know, I love the perspectives that you're getting, but I think you're missing an important perspective and one that may tell a different story, which is where I come from. And why I wanted to contact you, and just to say that, if you look at things through that lens and you live in the world I do, life is very different from, you know, what you hear from others, you know, no matter which side of the political spectrum they're coming from, it is still going to be different.
I think it's you know, this show is all about having different perspectives. So I'm very glad that you did write in and we, you know, we talked a little bit and decided to have you on the show. It's interesting to me as the one producing and hosting the show, because I realize these things are important, and I try to have as many different perspectives as possible. And my main concern at the moment is the women's perspective, which is more difficult to achieve than I would like. And this show and the last few shows have been an example of that, but I try to do it in every show I do. If you're a woman listening to the show and you'd like to be on, please let me know, because I'd love to have you on as well. But it's also... I hope people don't, and you, Gunnar, personally, don't take this as a negative sentiment, because it certainly isn't. I'm very glad to have you on, but there's also the fact that I try to have women on, I try to have people from different backgrounds, and there's always someone who doesn't feel represented, probably because they aren't. You know, I think about, of course, people of color in the U.S., people of color in other regions, people, immigrants. We don't have enough Arab voices from France, for example. It's a big community. I think about people of different sexual orientations. We have very few gay people on the show, or maybe they didn't make it clear that they were, if they were on. You know, all of those things. And so it's kind of a feeling of, this is my perspective on it. I'd like to plug all those holes, but it's really difficult. But the bottom line is not something, oh, you can't do it everything. Like, you can't please everyone. That's not how I'm coming at it from. It's cool that people like you check in and provide us with that perspective that is missing. So, again, thanks for being on.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please. That said,
I was just going to say, that said, where this ties in for me, and to get us to the lovely topic of impeachment, because I know we all just want to talk about that again. It's been so fun. Let me tell you. But if you look at the black vote in this country, the Democrats really rely on that in order to win. And in fact, it is part of the reason that Hillary Clinton wasn't able to defeat Trump in the last election. Black turnout was low, extremely low. And so I just took a look at and wanted to see, and I will fully admit, so stop me at any moment, I am currently in the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. So I spend all my time in these issues. So I get wonky. I'll just say that. But the black vote in 2016 was 8%. And that was the kind of where we were at in terms of what turnout was and what Republicans could hope for. And that was when there was a higher approval rating overall of Republicans in general. George W. Bush, we all remember and love him, right? He had a 14% approval rating with African Americans. Currently, right now, Trump sits somewhere between 8 and 10%. I don't know who that 8 and 10% are. I will fully say that, but he has between 8 and 10% approval rating among African Americans. And, you know, when you talk about that and think about where we're at, he is really managing to take communities of color and lower these historically, you know, the approval ratings amongst these groups don't change much for Republican presidents, but they're never high. And he is shrinking those a lot, which is going to be interesting in terms of where we're headed in this next election, which
Do
gets
you think
me
that
to
those communities
oh, yeah,
are,
go ahead.
Are turning back to Democrats, or are they just turning away from politics? I mean, obviously,
See,
we can't
speak
for everyone.
This is the interesting thing, right? So this is the interesting thing, and this is where I get with impeachment right now. I am so frustrated with the impeachment process, and I really do think at this point we are doing this process not to, like, the Democrats are doing this process not to remove a sitting president. They are doing this process to swing elections in the next election cycle. I think we all know, and it's pretty much a foregone conclusion, that we will impeach in the House, and we will send the case, you know, the Democrats will send the case over to the Senate, and when it gets there, he will not be removed.
Yeah.
Right. And I think what is happening is political theater in terms of trying to get as much information out there as we can that could be damaging to whether it be to Trump and the Trump administration or to Republicans in general. So right now what we're seeing is I don't know how aware you are, but Representative Devin Nunes, who is the ranking member on the committee right now that is doing the impeachment inquiry, he has recently been accused himself. He's alleged by one of Rudy Giuliani's good buddies who's under indictment. His name's Lev Parsons. He's been accused of having his own meetings with the corrupt Ukraine prosecutor, the Viktor Shoykin or whatever it is, while he was on an official visit to the Ukraine, which was taxpayer funded, which would in its own right be a huge scandal if we didn't have a new crazy scandal every day with our current president. And currently Nunes is saying he's going to sue everybody, and this is, you know, false and inflammatory. But you have someone who could, in fact, be a fact witness in the impeachment case, who is the second highest ranking investigator on the other side. He's the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee after Adam Schiff. So we have this thing going on where there is a major campaign with every turn of this impeachment inquiry to damage Republicans. But I don't know that the Democrats are necessarily trying to make the case to the general American public any stronger. You know, they're presenting their evidence, but we're at a point right now, and I just looked this up for you. So the latest polls that I was getting were 46% are in support of impeachment, and 45% don't support it.
It sounds like overall. It sounds like it doesn't really move the needle, which I guess is going to be my question. As crazy as it might be getting, isn't it just noise at this point? Because everything's crazy. It feels like that seen from here.
And I would say that's right. are at a point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, which is crazy. The fact that it's so crazy is crazy. Because it's so crazy. It should be more, but it isn't. And I guess that's the strategy of chaos, which is working. If it is a strategy, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting to me. So as you say that, and I feel the same, we've just got so much noise going on right now. And I think for a lot of people, they're just forget it. Let's just go to the elections. We don't know what's happening right now. It's just too much. And, the latest polls from 538, they see there's only 10 to 12% of Republicans that are persuadable. So really, the Republicans have already decided what they're going to decide. And then when you look at some specific questions they asked, they specifically asked, do you believe Trump withheld aid until he got the investigation he wanted? And you end up with 26% of Republicans think that happened. 84% of Democrats think it happened. But then if you ask the question of, did he cover up any actions in terms of Ukraine, you kind of get the same numbers. And even if he did do it, 28% of Republicans think, even if he did this thing, that he shouldn't be impeached for it.
So even if he did do the impeachable thing, that he shouldn't be impeached for it. But okay, let's flip it a little bit. Do you think back in Bill Clinton days, obviously it wasn't as, it was maybe for some people morally reprehensible, but it didn't have consequences in international geopolitics and election tampering, essentially. But still, if the question had been asked about Clinton, don't you think the numbers would have been reversed? And that's it. People just vote down the party line. And maybe that's me being cynical. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. Or maybe it was indeed less bad. So that explains why. But it feels to me like this is just the same it's always been, just more visible.
I think, it's interesting you say that. I don't think that Democrats and Republicans were as entrenched. And now you have to remember at that time that we had bipartisan support for moving ahead with the impeachment proceedings and with the attempt at removal. But that was also a time when we had a little more, we weren't so partisan and we weren't so to the extremes with Democrats and Republicans that were serving as representatives. Whereas right now we have no middle. We do not have conservative Democrats. There's two or three really in a house of 550. I mean, you just don't have that space anymore. And with Clinton, remember that the reason he was, so the charges that he was impeached for and going to be removed for were not any of the sexual stuff. It was the lying and the attempt at covering up. Can you imagine if we tried to impeach our current president for lying? I mean, most of our media here says that he averages 22 lies a day. Or falsehoods, I guess, is the nice way to put it.
Yeah, falsehoods. So how is the that thing going over in the... Again, as usual, you represent the entirety of the one subsection of your being that you are presenting on the show today. How is the Black or African community, African-American community taking this in the U.S.? You speak for all of them. Go.
Right. Yes. Overall, if you look at African-Americans, they are essentially what we're hearing here right now. First of all, overwhelmingly, you're going to hear words I'm not going to use on your show, Trump. It's just we need to get rid of this guy and he's not doing anything for us. And he makes it worse every time he opens his mouth when he talks about African-Americans or Blacks and says, I've done more for you than any Democrat and any president in the history of this country has done for you. I've made your lives better because there's more jobs and there's this and there's this. And, you know, it's kind of almost, I was reading a piece from an African-American journalist who was like, you know, it really almost sounds like the plantation owner telling you, you know, talking down to you. Those are very inflammatory words, obviously, but that to invoke that is a powerful thing. And clearly that author was trying to make a point, not one that the Trump administration is ever going to listen to or hear. But I do believe that that sentiment is there. Now, it's interesting when you talk about what it means in terms of the African-American community, because what we're doing right now and what we're hearing and seeing is everyone's trying to figure out what the Black vote is going to be in this next election.
Do you think that's going to be that's going to be the determining factor because they didn't come out to vote for the last election and they might this time? Or is it just one of the factors?
I think it's going to be a very big factor. I don't think it's as big as, you know, we have some candidates like Deval Patrick just got in and he basically got in because he's like, I'm a better Black guy than the other Black guys in the race. You know, Cory Booker's milquetoast and I'll give you a little more. That's not a reason to run for president, nor is he getting any support just off of that. I think that what you hear a lot in the conversation right now is what are the African-American voters looking for? And people are really trying to examine why Biden has such strong support in the African-American community. And really, it comes down to the African-American voter spends a lot of time trying to figure out where their vote is best cast and who can win. So it's not about necessarily who the African-American voter wants for themselves, but it's about who's the best option that we can get. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's calculating how to get the most bang for your buck, I suppose.
Yes.
In a way.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Mahmoud, is that, you know, the impeachment in general, is that getting play in the UAE or is it like too, you know, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear
me? Yes, we can hear you. So is it getting some headlines or?
It makes the regular headlines, like everyday news. So it's nothing special. No, but I'll give you the general attitude about American foreign policy, presidents, everybody, politicians. And bless yourself. From this region, we all look at the American foreign policy the same way. It's bad, okay? Nothing good. Yeah, nothing good comes out of the American foreign policy. On domestic level, I can speak on domestic level. I can put myself in American shoes, but I still, you know, I view it from my own perspective. Trump is definitely maybe the more visibly worse out of the history of presidents you guys had over there. In terms of what he actually says, anybody here will say that what Trump says in public, the others said in private or did in private. He's just public about it. Now, for this current impeachment proceedings and the whole Ukraine thing, I can see how it's upsetting and morally reprehensible from an American's point of view, because if he did this bargaining, the quid pro quo, regarding something that will benefit the policy or the government or the American diplomacy, not
well, the campaign, mostly his re-election campaign, that's the problem.
An election, yeah.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying, if he did that, okay, but it wasn't for his own personal gain, okay? But for the administration, for the government, he did something less. And they do, I believe, and everybody here believes, this happens on this level with all countries that deal with American foreign policy. Nobody in the United States will say anything. Maybe they would praise him for it. He achieved something for the country. But because he used this to for personal gain and the general sentiment of resentment for this specific person called Donald Trump is what getting all of this impeachment thing and this basically war in the media and in Congress about it. I couldn't, honestly, myself, Mahmoud, I couldn't care less what happens to him. I don't really follow American. The only American politics I listen to is what Justin Robertson has to say, and I listen to. Yeah, and I listen not because I want to be informed. I just like Justin, and he's entertaining no matter what the subject he's talking about. So I listen to his politics show as well. So that's, this is how I see it.
Let me ask you a question then. It seems surprisingly that, at least in your opinion, the Arab world is disillusioned with the American leadership of the world. Is that a relatively new phenomenon? Or has it always been like this? Because for us, and I suspect it might be the case, but for us in Europe, that disillusionment, we've never been, you know, we've always been critical of the US, of course, and that I think is the case for the whole world. But there is a new level of disillusionment and kind of abandoning the idea that, for better or worse, America is the world leader in you know, economy. I hesitate to say morals, but like, it's not really the moral compass. It's like, or maybe it is, you know, it's saying what's right and wrong. And we might be grumbling and not be happy about it, but usually it shows the direction for, or it showed the direction, at least for the Western world. Now, in the past few years, it's partly because of Trump, not only, but partly because of Trump, maybe a big part, we're looking at this and saying, well, F those guys. Like, not Trump, America in general and what it represents. Of course, we're still buying iPhones and watching, you know, Marvel movies. But in like the sentiment towards America, it's like, okay, fine, you do your thing on the side. And there are, it's the realization of a multipolar world where it used to be mainly America and then others. Now there are multiple centers of power in the world. So there is certainly disillusionment towards America, which is relatively recent. Mahmoud, would you say that that's the case as well? Or has it always been like this anyway and you never trusted the Americans?
In the Arab world, no, in the Arab world, it's always been this way. Maybe the disenchantment, like it was for a week with Obama. What's his name? Obama. For you know, the first week after his inauguration, people genuinely believed he was a good guy. And that lasted exactly a week. I remember seeing the first headline, you know, towards, no, he's the same exactly 1 week after his inauguration. But in general, it's still the same. Personally, like right now, if you ask me, from all the world players on the stage right now, mainly China, Russia, and the US, I would have rather have the US leading the world, not Russia or China. And maybe the only thing I would speak in good terms about or positively see Donald Trump in is his standing up to China. And yes, it's only an economic level, but it, at least he stood up for against China. I think China and Russia are a bigger threat to the world than the US, definitely.
Okay, so there's still this, maybe it's not a shining beacon, but at least it's the least bad of the powerful.
No, I'll take it. Honestly, we'll
take
it will never.
Yeah, yeah, I'll take it too.
A shining beacon. Yeah, it's the enemy you know versus the enemy you don't know.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Gunnar, anything to add before we move on?
No, I think, you know, stay tuned. The Democrats are trying to move as quick as they can. They want to kind of get this done. And the word on the street with that is that, you know, we have a Democratic primary. So a bunch of the candidates will have to be back at Congress being part of these proceedings. So they want to get these senators their chance to be out there trying to win the nomination. So they're going to speed everything up. It's a mess. Just stay tuned.
So when is it supposedly going to end?
Looks like we may be in the next 2 weeks, but we just had a court ruling from a federal court that said that Don McGahn, president, you know, the former White House attorney, that he has to comply with the subpoenas. So we're about to get set for a big round of legal challenges. And if that comes through, that the courts say that Trump cannot use presidential privilege to protect all of his employees, then we could see another round of testimony coming through with compelled testimony from all those witnesses. So we may end up having more testimony when they're trying to close it up. But if they get that window, they will take it. And this will go on into, you know, through December and maybe into the next year.
Mm. Okay. Well, good luck with that. In other typical disorganization and chaos news, Europe is on strike. Well, not really. there's demonstration in France for a law that we don't know anything about yet, but there's probably the most controversial government reform that has been tried and implemented partially for years and years, and that is retirement reform. Retirement pay, because as you probably know, in France and in most of Europe, you get, when you retire, the government pays a pension. Right, that's the word. And it's not always big, but it's big enough that it's a heavy, heavy... I mean, it's the story of pension in the whole world, right? The population is aging and we don't have enough to pay retirements forever. And the people who are reaching or close to or who are looking towards retirement are unhappy about the idea that they have paid for everyone else's retirement for decades and now they're not going to get theirs. And especially in France, I think it's really difficult to implement those reforms because, as you know, we are especially combative about any social change. And I think it's one of those things where everyone kind of understands that we need to do something, but everyone thinks that, and when I say everyone, it's probably accurate, like left and right. Anytime anything is proposed, then it's probably not done well because they look at how it is impacting them. Or, I mean, it's a very complex web of sentiment and practicality. And usually the way it ends up is when a government attempts to implement a reform, it is considered to be badly implemented and the entire country goes down in the street, mostly the left, of course, and the militant left. That's to be expected. But I think it's pretty clear that that is what usually happens. This government, Macron's government, is trying to implement another of those. And the peculiar thing here is that we, as I said initially, we don't have the details on exactly what that reform is going to be. And in spite of that, the protests have already been planned, which I understand might not make sense in, you know, the rest of the world. It quite frankly doesn't make much sense in France either. It's a kind of a weird situation, but it's not that unexpected because we know where the government is heading towards and we know what those who are against these kinds of reforms are demanding. And so it makes sense that there would be protests and demonstrations, even though we don't exactly know what the nature, the substance of the reform is going to be, because no one expects it to be things that the people who want to protest are going to be in agreement with, if that makes any sort of sense. And the even more exceptional thing is that in Finland, I don't have all the details about this particular strike movement, but the postal service is on strike. And when my wife told me, hey, by the way, you know, we might not get mail for a week or two because the post is on strike, I was like, blah? People on strike in Finland? What are you talking about? And it is incredibly rare. I've never heard in years and years of frequenting the country, I've never heard of anyone being on strike. So this is not like France. But from what I understand, the key issue is that the postal service was privatized a few years ago, and they are now also wanting to implement a reform with salary cuts and expenses cuts, and the population, the workers at the postal service are unhappy about this. And it's interesting because in a country where me coming from a country where strikes are like the most common thing in the world, it would not have the same impact on me as it does here. When it's happening here, I'm like, oh, they're on strike, maybe there's something really bad happening. Whereas in France, if it was, you know, if there's a strike happening, I'm like, maybe something's happening, but it might very possibly just be that, you know, it's Tuesday. So yeah, that's the situation, the biggest thing I think now and in the upcoming couple of weeks for France and Finland. The strike in France or the demonstrations in France are planned for the 5th of December, which also coincides with the anniversary period of the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vests movement. So there's kind of a big uncertainty here on it might just flare up again. It had died down a little bit after months of protest every week, and it might, you know, just flare up again, or it might just be a little spike and then die down again. So yeah, that's what's happening in France. I guess, especially from the US, when you look at this, you think those French people are crazy, but I don't know. And in the UAE, I don't even know if it's allowed to strike. Or as you said, Mahmoud, everyone's taken care of, so you don't have any reason to be unhappy and go on demonstrations.
Yeah, yeah. But in Jordan, actually, it's becoming more like France. Every day there's a strike.
Really? Good for you.
Yeah. Recently, the teachers' union, which is the biggest union in the country, and they're recently unionized as well. They went on a 12-day strike. And basically, the country grind into a halt because of it. Because, you know, children stayed at home and nobody wants to have their children at home. Just please send them back to school. Pay the teachers whatever they want and just let our children go back to school.
Yes, and I agree. Yeah, that would be very effective. Loving my kid as much as I do, I love him even more when he's in school during weekdays. So did they get what they asked for?
Pretty much they got a 50% salary raise, basically.
Wow!
Yes,
impressive.
It was a huge demand, but the strike came because they were promised this 2 years ago, and the government did not deliver, so they went on strike. And I think the king got involved at the end as well, and directed the government, give them what they want, stop being silly. Because the government was very stubborn with them. They didn't show any kind of sympathy or empathy with them. And but at the end, they got what they want, and everybody's happy now.
It's interesting to
everybody,
be.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is now every other union is talking about strikes.
You don't negotiate with the unions.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to be a French person in the English-speaking world and in the U.S. especially, because I am absolutely for unions. And we talk about this in the gaming world a lot, because there are issues with this new industry, and the way I look at it is just, if you don't have unions, then you don't have a seat at the table when discussions are happening as a part of the economic forces. And when we talk about these things, I'm a little bit cheeky, and I think maybe we're taking it a little bit far, or we're not doing exactly the right way in France, so it's easy to make fun of, and I, jump in on the fun. But it's also, I completely agree that unions are important, and that's a disconnect, I think, with Americans, who see unions are intrinsically suspect and anti, work, and trying to sabotage everything you try to do. So
anti-capitalism, basically.
Yeah, essentially. Which is interesting, because some of the most successful areas of the American economic world are heavily unionized and still work very well. Gunnar, is that how do you, when you listen and you hear those stories, those horror stories of constant demonstration and strikes in France, is that the way you look at it, or what do you think of this?
It is fascinating to me, because the only time we really see demonstration, I mean, in terms that I think of, is when there is like a police shooting or a major issue like that, would be the only time that we would see people in the streets. But for labor issues and things like that, we don't often see, unless it is teachers. So schools are very powerful in that they will walk out, and the teachers will withhold their labor in order, and nurses. Those would be the only two groups where I see it, but it is not that common. So to hear one that it happens and it's supported by the people ever, is amazing to me. To hear that the union was able to demonstrate and get a 50% raise for their people, the American capitalist pig in me almost had a fainting spell right there.
I think it's a function of the specific nature of Jordan as a country, because I don't think that would happen in France or any other country that I know.
Yeah, that's amazing. But yeah, it's just not something that I see that much here. I can think back to when we did have a police shooting, and then Black Lives Matter, they actually went out and demonstrated, and they were, they blocked traffic. It's one of the specific ways they choose to show their civil disobedience and to, put some pain on people to make them look at the issues. Yeah, and if you could see the way that it is received and the way that it goes down here when that happens, if traffic gets blocked, it will make all the news, and you will have mostly people saying, this was very selfish of them. Why are they doing this here? I have nothing to do with the issue. They need to go protest somewhere else or something. I need to get home, or I need to. We've even had a couple of instances where if you block the streets and traffic, we have people who just drive through and end up injuring protesters, because, they feel they should just be able to drive through. And if you won't get out of their way, they will make you get out of their way.
So. There's similar stuff happening in protests in France as well. Most of the time they're, well organized, and well, maybe I shouldn't say that, but most of the time I was going to say they're incident free. Things in the past year have been very different. There are always incidents, but usually the big ones try to inconvenience people. That's especially the case for public transportation, because we use that a lot. And that's the problem, is that's the only way they can get heard or can get people to care about the issues. But yeah, there's no easy solution to any of this. So it is kind of similar, but it's interesting to hear that the demonstrations in the US, I guess I knew that, but I never really realized, happen for societal issues like Black Lives Matter. There is, however, something that this makes me think of, and it's the writers' strike a few years ago in Hollywood. And what I always, what I feel like is that strikes are rare in the U.S., but they do happen. And when they happen, everything stops. Like everything just grinds to a halt in that industry. And it's arduous negotiations, and hopefully, usually it works out. It does feel a little bit, and looking at it from the French perspective, I'm probably center right, I would say. So take that with a grain of salt. But in France, it does feel like we're striking and demonstrating all the time, which does diminish the efficiency of it. And there's a culture of that in the country, which I don't know how I feel about, but yeah. All right. Well, that was a really interesting couple of conversations. Thank you very much to the two of you for being on the show with me. We're going to bring this to a close. But before we do, as always, I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell us where we can find you on the internet. Mahmoud, your Twitter name changed since last time.
Yeah, I recently changed it. It's now at Hirosan underscore 83.
What is Hirosan? Is it like Mr. Hero in Japanese?
Yeah, exactly. It went from Sanzu to Hirosan.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, Hirosan 83, that link will be in the show notes. Gunnar, do you have a Twitter account or something that you want to tell people
I
about?
I do. My Twitter account is at Cigar Adventures. So I am a cigar guy, and that's where you can see my, anything and everything, and you can reach me there.
All right. Very cool. Thank you very much. Cigar Adventures. I will put the link in the show notes as well. For me, it's NotPatrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'm also on, the show is at FrenchSpin.com. You can check that out there and comment on the episode. And you can also find Pixels, my gaming show, which is recorded every other week. Lots of stuff happening in gaming as well, so you might be interested in that too. Thank you very much for listening. Hopefully, we will be back with our third and I guess not final episode of the Brexit saga next episode. We'll see what happens there. We might need you, Mahmoud, to come and give us some heartwarming news after that on that episode as well to lift our spirits a little bit. But we'll see that in a few weeks. All right. Thanks to both of you. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll be back in a few weeks. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.